Hey, everyone. Welcome to Swapping Spit. I'm Connor Mack here with my good old pal, best buddy, and just all around cool guy, Connor Kelly.
Wow. That was a really nice intro. I felt like you really... I feel kind of gassed up, some might say. Some people say gas them up, well, for their friends.
You know, you're a man that I think you deserve to be gassed up from time to time.
Thanks.
You're just a real kind fella. This podcast is a podcast where we talk about music.
Yep.
We swap albums.
Yes, we do.
And you know, along the way, we do talk about other things.
Yeah, you know, we like to have fun.
We like to have fun in the podcast. It's a loose format. We get silly with it. We get jiggy with it, you might say. I wouldn't say that, but some people might say that we get jiggy with it.
Some people might.
I'm sure
I wouldn't say it either, for the record.
No, we wouldn't. We're not people that use the term jiggy.
No.
We wouldn't say that. We're not jiggy people.
No. I don't think there's that many jiggy people left. I think there used to be a lot of them.
I agree, yeah. The world is experiencing a jiggy... people famine.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, we're just living in a post-jiggy time. You know, there's just... There's no other way to say it.
I get behind that so hard. I mean, when do you think the jig died? When do you think it died?
Well, I mean, it was it would have been like... probably by the late 90s, maybe literally the year 2000. It could have been Y2K that killed Jiggy.
Mm-hmm. Everyone thought that computers were going to destroy society, but in reality, Y2K was just the death of Jig.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up Y2K and all, you know. Well, I did.
You did bring up Y2K.
Well, like computers,
but that is interesting,
with
right.
Computers and shit, because... They were actually, before they were called gigabytes, they were going to call them gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
But people were like, mm-hmm. We can't now, it's dead.
No,
they had to go with a different name. It was going to be gigabytes.
The day that Jig died.
Yep.
January 1st, 2000, yes.
Well, we're all familiar with that date.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some people do still call them gigabytes.
Just like some people say GIFs. You know, they're wrong.
Uh-huh.
Those people are wrong, so.
I sometimes say GIFs. I take turns between how I pronounce it.
Well, then, I feel like you must only do that because when you take turns, you're just trying to piss someone off who you know.
No, I don't think so.
Like, there's no, I mean, you don't just, like, go between two different pronunciations of a word.
I do it all the time.
That doesn't make any fucking sense. What do you mean? What other words would that even apply to?
How I'm feeling at the time influences how I pronounce something, like Patreon or Patreon. That was a big
discussion
that we had.
That's different. I don't know, man.
Sometimes I'll say it the right way. Sometimes I'll say
it my way. That's like when people, you know, go to Target and they're like, "Oh, I'm going to Target." Like, do they really? It's not that they like. Sometimes, like, pronounce Target, Target when they're not thinking about it. They just... Well, say it depends on how you feel. I don't know.
It depends on how I feel. It's not unintentional. I'll just, like, you know...
I guess
change
all
things
I'm
up
trying to say is that the way you would naturally pronounce it is GIF. Just like you would naturally say Target. It's not like...
So the way I would naturally pronounce it might be close... Might be more often GIF, to be honest.
Can't believe you're telling me this late into our friendship, Connor.
It's just because GIF is too close to the gift, and then also I think of Spencer's Gifts, which is a store that I don't know if I like.
I think they're a pretty shit store overall.
Yeah, just like some really raunchy.
I'm not looking for any like fucking endorsement deals by Spencer's Gifts, so I don't care what I fucking say.
Honestly. I feel like they've got a lot of, like, misogynistic apparel.
Yeah, totally.
I don't really like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, they definitely, they probably promote and perpetuate some regressive lines of thinking. You know, just to absolutely. Make, just and to make they've a got quick a lot buck. Of,
they've got a lot of Trump merchandise now, too.
Yeah, those fuckers.
Like, come on, don't cash in on the death of our free world.
Yep. Or maybe the world. You know, time will tell. It might just be all of it.
Mm-hmm. It could be all of it. Could be the just the first the death of the jig, and then you know 17 years later we have the death of the world. It all crumbles down.
Yeah,
that's
we should have seen it coming. You know,
Y2K is where it all started. That's where it all went wrong. That's where you know.
You know, maybe then we got to bring the jig back.
Okay. Do you want to? Actually, you know what would be fun right now?
What?
Okay. So. We do, we kind of joke around, I don't do much editing on the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, but,
We do, why? So, but what?
Well, because right now I feel like we're going to get jiggy with it. I think we should play some music and, you know, do a little dance. And, like make some dancing noises so the listeners can, kind of dance with us.
Some dancing noises?
Yeah, like, you know.
Right. Now it's time to get like, funky.
Yeah, okay. So, we're gonna get jiggy with it in 3, 2, 1. Yeah.
No, we're done.
You didn't like that?
I think maybe it was, maybe that was the wrong call. You know, I think we should just
did we not,
go on.
Did we not revive?
I don't know.
Did we not revive the jig?
I don't know if anyone can. You know, maybe it was supposed to stay dead.
Okay. Okay, well, at least we can say we tried.
We gave it a shot.
We can put that on our tombstones. Tried to revive the jig.
Right. We'll be buried next to each other. Here lies mm-hmm. Connor and Connor.
Or maybe it'll be died trying to revive the jig.
Right. They got too jiggy with it.
We got way too jiggy with it. And for the listeners, you know, I just apologize if that was off-putting to you. I just want you to know that my heart is in the right place.
It always is.
So, you know, this is a music podcast, and music and... You know, being jiggy, those are two things that do go together.
Yeah. Yep.
And yeah, we're here to talk about some things tonight. And the first being a song by a musician who we have actually covered pretty recently on the podcast, just a handful of or less than a handful of episodes ago. Song by Jeff Rosenstock.
That's right.
So he put out the album Worry, which we reviewed on an earlier podcast. And both of us, I think, pretty much gave it rave reviews.
It's out of all the times we've been doing numerical scores, it's my highest choice.
It is, yeah.
It's 8.5.
8.5.
Yours was an 8.
I was pretty gobsmacked by that rating you gave.
Oh, spoiler alert. I'm going to give you a Godsmack album later tonight. That reminds me.
I'm not sure if I'll be as gobsmacked with this Godsmack album.
Yeah. That's not what's happening. I'm just going to come clean. I just wanted to say that.
Oh, so. Man. Really? Okay. Anyways, Jeff Rosenstock put out a single... called Dramamine, and I think I read on the internet that the story behind this is that on tour after Worry came out, he wrote a bunch of songs and recorded demos on the road, and he was planning on making those his next album. Like no matter how good or bad they were, he would just he like cleaned them up in the studio and flesh them out, but that was going to be his next album. And then I think his laptop got stolen or something.
Yeah.
And so Dramamine was the only surviving song out of that batch, I think. And so he put it out and put it online to download for free, which is pretty sweet. It's a pretty pretty baller move, if I do say so myself.
It is, but I'm pretty sure he has a pretty rich history of doing so.
He's got a track record of that, so it was not surprising. He started out doing DIY stuff, and the whole, like, you know, he made a record label, which the whole point of it is just to do pay what you want. And I think that was even before Radiohead did it, yeah. Which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, he was like a whole pioneer for that, all that bomb the music industry shit that he's famous for.
And, okay, before we get into talking about the song, I kind of a funny story to tell.
Sure.
Something that's prompted me actually to recently go through all the Bomb the Music Industry albums. I'm kind of listening to all of them in order now. But anyways, I think it's fair to say everyone has heard of Tinder at this point. I think it's
It's
a pretty common.
I think you can just totally talk about Tinder, and most people are gonna know what's up.
Okay, so I was on Tinder.
Yep.
Last week, and I matched with this girl who her bio said that she wants to go to punk rock shows with somebody. And I was like, hey, I'm the perfect guy to go to punk rock shows with because I like punk rock.
Yep.
And I like going to shows. I'm a cool ass dude.
That's a good start sometimes. To selling yourself.
Yeah, that was not my opening message, but I said, hey, I like to go to punk rock shows. What are some of your favorite bands? And she's like, oh, well, my number one is Jeff Rosenstock. And then she listed a bunch of other bands, too, that are pretty cool. But so I responded. I was like, oh, yeah, I love Jeff Rosenstock. Worry was one of my favorite albums last year. And then she responded with, ha, 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 ha. Worry's like his worst album. And I was like, you little shit.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Oh, you got one of those, you know, elitist.
Mm-hmm.
Elitist punks there.
That's.
I mean, and to be fair, exactly. I haven't listened to any of those other albums. Although I've wanted to, but I fucking haven't. So, you know, hey, maybe she's right.
No, it's fine.
Maybe they're all just, like, incredible fucking. I'd be, oh, dude. They're all 10 out of 10s. Jeff Rosenstock wins music forever. But,
no, I mean, that honestly could be the truth. I haven't dug in. But just to, like, you know, kind of felt like she was shaming me for, getting into Jeff Rosenstock, you know, not being a hardcore early Rosenstock fan.
No, totally. Unfortunately, there's a lot of gatekeepers in the scene like that. In the scene, man.
You know, there are, and I'm not going to blame her. Maybe she was having a bad day, or that wasn't her intention, but it's certainly the vibe I got. But after that, we had a kind of a good conversation about punk rock and music and stuff. But it turned out she lives states away from me and was just visiting the area. So so that's going to be a
I wonder what her reaction would have been missed. Did you tell her your favorite band was Green Day? And that you got into them with
honestly,
American Idiot? Cause...
Honestly, yeah. I don't want to... That's a door I didn't want to open.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I
probably
would have
been unmatched. Yeah. I probably would have been unmatched, to be honest. But anyway, so yeah. Then I, you know, that prompted me to go back and check out his full discography. And so far...
Being shamed by a girl on Tinder made you want to listen to Jeff Rosenstock?
Being shamed by girls on Tinder is like my life.
that's what you're running on these days.
It gives me fuel.
Dramamine.
Dramamine. Yes. It's a fun, catchy, one-off single.
Yep.
That kind of, you know, I mean, being a newbie, being a Rosenstock newbie, I don't know for sure, but I want to say it's classic Jeff Rosenstock. It feels like if it was shortened, it could have fit in on the sweet part of Worry.
Yeah.
At the very end, I think it fit in well. And yeah, it's a fun song about, you know, hoping Dramamine will put you to sleep because of, you know, I guess because your life is, shit.
That's like his worst song, you fucking idiot. Can't believe you just said any of those words.
I know.
Let me tell you why it's terrible. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. One, I thought it was Drama Mine before I started listening to it. So what the fuck is a drama mean? Fuck you, Jeff Rosenstock, for fucking titling your song something confusing. And what's with the bridge and just like this person talking to you over and over again and being all weird? I think it should have just been three chords, and the only word in it is Dramamine, and then it ends. And instead, you just get this whole other fucking song around it, and it sucks. So, there. Don't even ask me what I fucking think about Dramamine. There it is.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
I think I'm going to unmatch you. I'm sorry. But it's not going to work out.
Well, it's fun while it lasted.
It was fun while it lasted.
On a more serious note, yeah. I did like this song.
Yeah, it's a cool song.
You know, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty short and sweet. And even though I do think the bridge is pretty cool, but overall it's like pretty straightforward. It kind of just does its thing. And,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, the guitars are all like cool and fuzzed out. Like, I dig it. It's just like a kind of a driving good track.
Yeah, and it's you know, the drums, at least mostly, are obviously fake, which I think is kind of, again, classic Jeff Rosenstock.
Classic Jeff. We know him so well.
I'm an old school fan. I've listened to one bomb music industry album, so I think I know my shit, man.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, no, so it's cool. It, you know, feels like it's, doesn't feel like it was thrown together, but it feels loose and, you know, energetic and fun. And yeah, so I dig it. I thought it was a cool thing to put out.
I agree. It's too bad that his laptop was stolen.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I think. I'm pretty sure I read. I could be mistaken.
Well, I'm just going to pretend that that's true, and if, you know, if we figure out otherwise, or if someone tweets at us and goes, maybe it'll be that girl from Tinder. She'll just be like, ha 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 ha. That's not what happened to his laptop at all, you know?
That's...
It'd be funny,
that might
right?
be what... Just like, he actually gave me his laptop to borrow. I have it on me. I have all those songs, and they're so much... Dramamine was the worst one.
Right. There you go. That's how you learn. By other people being rude to you.
Abso-fucking-lutely. And again, I just want to say that, like, I'm not trying to publicly shame anybody from Tinder, but that was a funny moment.
I wasn't either. I'm just... I don't think. I don't know, actually.
I'm going to edit this part out. Okay.
Kind of just one
thing. So since this podcast has been on iTunes,
yep.
I think in every single episode, we've talked about Blink.
I think we have.
We've talked about Blink songs. Because, you know, California, the deluxe version is coming out in just a week and a half, I think. May 19th. At the time of this podcast airing or being published, it'll be less than a week. So they've been putting out, you know, pre-release songs, and they've been getting, you know, better and better. Because, I mean, we weren't expecting much, to be fair.
No, but, definitely not.
The last two that came out, Misery and 6-8, were, you know, decent to good. So... that was exciting. And we're happy to say that, though. This time, this podcast, we're not going to be talking about a new Blink song.
So, suck it, haters.
Suck it, haters. But, and we're not actually really going to be talking about anybody from that's in Blink-182 that's playing with them actively right now. That's not what's happening right here.
No.
We might mention, you know, but primarily we'll be talking about somebody who is not on the California album.
No.
They're not touring with the band right now.
No.
No, they're as far away from it as could possibly be. They're doing their own thing.
Yeah, it's almost like they're in another galaxy. It's kind of like Blink is a little alien to them these days.
Oh,
you know?
Mm-hmm. It's somebody who, you know, is trying to take humanity to the stars.
Of course we're speaking about the one, the only, Thomas Adelbert DeLong.
Oh, man. Thomas Adelbert DeLong.
Or Tad.
Actually, Tad. Tad's a terrible name.
What, do you know Tom's middle name? Were you about to tell me?
I do. No, yeah, it's actually Matthew. But do you know the funny thing? The funniest thing about this is that
what?
Matt Skiba's middle name is Thomas.
What?
Mm-hmm.
It's like their first name and middle names are like swapped.
I know, it's pretty wacky, right?
You know, maybe in the future, have you ever seen those things they do where like they have like the list of comparisons and weird contrasts between like Abraham Lincoln and JFK for like the assassination?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I think they'll have that, but with Tom DeLong and Matt Skiba.
Yeah, you know, Blink fans already do. You know, they've already compared. And honestly, to this day, I still think Matt Skiba is the only person that could have replaced Tom DeLong.
I mean, are you saying that with hindsight involved, though? Like, what is that? That feels like kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, now that Matt Skiba is the one who replaced Tom, it's like, oh, well, Matt's the only guy who could have done it. And he is the only guy who did it, so.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, if you had asked me that before it happened, I don't know if I would have given his name, but it just, and it doesn't even feel right, but it feels like he's the closest they can get, in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, so since Tom left, or was pushed out of the band, over 2 years ago, I think now, he's been pursuing a lot of different activities. You know, he's got his own company, To the Stars, where he's currently producing a series of novels, both fiction and nonfiction, primarily.
Depending on what you believe, sure.
Primarily of the sci-fi genre, or just the sci genre.
Yeah, you know, again, that's
depending on what you believe. Yeah, but yeah, so now with California Deluxe being almost out there in the open, it seems like Tom has been ramping up his social media presence, and you know, he was apparently chatting to Travis Barker, Blink's drummer, about something very serious, and he's also been heavily hinting at a Boxcar Racer reunion, which he did all that right at the start of the Blink breakup as well.
Hmm.
And then kind of went silent for a period of time. So yeah, I mean, fans are speculating. It could all just be Tom being Tom, you know, trying to gain some hype for, you know, his upcoming projects. But like the part of me that's a fan of Tom's music, it's like, I'd love a Boxcar Racer reunion. I'd love Tom to rejoin the band. I mean, I'm pretty sure he said in like a live video chat, yesterday that he said he could rejoin the band at any time.
I mean, he said that in the past, too. So,
which is something that he said before, right. too. Yeah. So, it's
any
just time, like...
any second. Whenever he feels yeah, like it. I
mean, well, that's pretty much what he's saying.
Right.
So, I don't really know what to think if he's all hullabaloo or not. I mean, because this is something for, you know, for the most part, Mark Hoppus and Travis Barker have been staying out of. They haven't been talking about it very much since it happened. So it could be very possible that they're just wrapped up in legal stuff and they can't really discuss, where Blink is actually at. Cause Tom is still, I think, a primary shareholder or something along with Travis and Mark. So obviously it could get very messy.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of truth to that. I'd be equally unsurprised if it's just that, like, Tom's just proven himself to be, like, notoriously difficult to fucking work with in the public. And, you know, Mark especially probably just doesn't even... It's like, because if you acknowledge him...
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to open up a conversation and all... You know, it's kind of like...
Yeah, sure.
You know, if you, like, engage someone who's, like, shouting at you on the street, and, you know, sometimes you ignore those people and you keep walking, and you just avoid that whole situation. But if you, like, turn and make direct eye contact with them and go, hey, you're in for whatever that fucking conversation's going to be now. And Tom has been, you know, pretty all over the place, which... I want to see Tom go crazier. Like, I want to just see how far this rabbit hole goes, you know? Like, I'm all for it. I think he's the... I think all that weirdness about him is what makes him not only the most interesting member of Blink, like, because of that weirdness, just in terms of, like, his personality and what he does, but... the most interesting in terms of the risks that he takes and the way that I think that that unique strangeness manifests itself through his art, mm-hmm. you know, and especially through his music. And so, like, I think because he has these qualities that I think are pretty easy to make fun of, I would never, like, really, I don't mean it like a, you know, like some girl on Tinder trying to shame you.
Oh my god.
So,
this poor girl. She doesn't listen to this.
Yeah, I don't even know who that is.
Neither do I, really.
I mean, right. She's, so, you know, it's all in good fun. But with Tom, yeah, I mean, especially so for this Boxcar Racer thing, you gave me the Boxcar Racer album, which I think was just self-titled, and their only one.
It was, yeah.
I mean, that would have been probably about a year ago, around then. Maybe a bit less than that, but...
Yeah,
but,
maybe a little less, but close.
You know, and even back then, whenever that came out, like
2002,
five, two, three, I think? 2004, okay, sure.
It's
cool to see how different that ends up being from Blink. And I just remember being really sucked in the way it starts with, like, this really long kind of winding instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I imagine, you know, a lot of the same, like, techniques and, like, mentalities that kind of created that first record. But now with all the benefit of Tom's experience with, like, Angels and Airwaves and, you know, the whole Neighborhoods thing and everything, like, I like his music now, too. And thinking about how those two worlds could collide, I think it would produce something really surprising and a lot of fun to listen to. So
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I am primarily a Tom DeLonge fan out of every Blink member, you know. I love them all separately and together, but Tom has always been my number one. I mean, we share a birthday, for God's sake. So.
Hey, I'm only one day off from Billy Joe.
So. I know, you are. That's pretty impressive, too.
That's right. That's always been my one claim to fame. I've been jealous that I don't have a cool shared birthday like you do. I think I share a birthday with John Travolta or someone.
Okay, that's kind of funny.
You know, I don't really give a shit. Okay, just keep going.
It's not really a cool thing, but it's like a fun
just
thing.
Just keep on going. We all don't right. need to shame John Travolta too right now.
John Travolta, if you're on Tinder, you better hope you don't match with Connor, because he's going to shame you out the wazoo. Yeah, no, so whatever Tom does next, I'm there for, I'm excited. Right now, I think the plan is to release some new Angels and Airwaves music with his upcoming feature film. And also, like, quickly, I want to talk to you about, like, his whole extraterrestrial pursuits and his multimedia ambitions and what you think of all that, or even how much you even know about what he's planning.
So, should I start with what I think I know then, or do you want to just, like, let it rip?
No, yeah, you can go ahead and start, because I think that might be funnier.
It probably will be. well, okay, so are we, like, talking just specifically about the whole Two to Stars company thing, or just, like, in general? Like,
I guess just in general, yeah, I mean.
All right, so I'm pretty sure this whole aliens thing started because he believes he was abducted, which I also think is why the song Aliens Exists is a song in the first place. So I think that he had, like, an abduction experience. And so he's been heavily interested in extraterrestrials and alien life and all that. So he's totally, you know, he's like UFO guy, not just, you know, like microorganisms on fucking Mars. He's like, nah, dude. There's, like, little green men, or tall ones. They're probably not that small, but whatever. And then anything in between, like, that and the Two of the Stars thing, I don't know. We're just going to fucking skip all that. I don't give a shit. So, Two of the Stars, right, you mentioned the whole multimedia thing. So he does the books, of which there's two out. I think there's Secret Machines and Chasing Shadows. And I'm pretty sure the Secret Machines one is the nonfiction book. And I think it's also the one that's being adapted into a documentary. And he's kind of gone through this whole, cause I, you know, I follow him on Instagram and stuff, and he'll just fucking, you know, he'll be like, oh, I met with a 5-star general today. You know, we went to Panera Bread, and he divulged the secrets of the government. And I'm just like, all right, dude. He's like, you don't know how high up this goes. You know, the president's adopted second niece, you know, has all the secrets. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ. And like, as long as I'm on the Instagram topic, I just feel like I got to bring this up because, like, he'll just, like, post pictures sometimes that, you know, they're not, like, pictures he took. They're just, like, he just, like, goes on Google Images, like, we'll type in aliens, post it, and be like, you must search for the truth. And I'm like, you can't do that. You can't just, like, fucking... The pictures that you're finding are not real, you know? Like, they're all, like, doctored or photoshopped or just, like, blatantly fake. And he'll, like, post them to be like, we must search for the aliens. And I'm like, what are you doing? That doesn't make any sense. You can't just find an obviously fake picture and then be like trying to like convince people that there's aliens. You're just making your own self seem less credible and weird. Mm-hmm. And he is totally weird. I don't know, man. And, like, personally, I guess I don't believe that aliens have visited Earth, or that they, I don't know, like, maybe even can, or I don't know. I mean, like, I don't want to get into this too much, because I don't think anyone gives a shit about my beliefs, but it's like, do I believe that there's aliens? Yeah, absolutely. Almost 100%, because just, like, fucking statistically, out of all the planets in the goddamn universe and all the stars they orbit and shit, there's gotta be aliens somewhere, dude. But I do not think they're anywhere even fucking close to us. They are not coming to Earth, and they are not putting probes up people's assholes. I'm sorry, Tom. I don't think that's what happened to you. So, like, for this whole documentary thing, you know, and he's like, I'd be interested in watching it. Sometimes I'll still, like, watch shitty documentaries and conspiracy theories and...
Yeah, sure.
You know, like, I think that's fun, and I think that's entertaining. But I don't think there's any real credibility to it. So, like, for the nonfiction stuff and for the documentary that's being made, like, I'd watch it more as, like, a curiosity. To be like, who are these people that Tom is talking to? Is there any, like, compelling evidence on it at all? You know, shit like that. But at the end of the day, like, Tom's passionate, and, you know, I would never tell him to not be doing what he's, you know, he's not hurting anyone. I just think he's a literal goofball. Like, I think he's a total, you know, weird dad, basically. And, like, yeah, that kind of makes me love totally him. I think it's charming, even though I think it's, like, you know, personally, I think it's dumb. But, like, you know, he's just doing his thing. And it's a source of inspiration for a lot of other people, too. And right, it's definitely not just, I mean, books and shit. It's music. Like, it's all cool. Yeah. So,
yeah. You know, even if a lot of his art, in some people's opinion, is... like, I don't know, silly or, you know, just not good, I guess. I mean, there are a lot of people who have read his books and you know, love Ava's music and stuff. I haven't read any of the books, but, I'm a big Ava fan. So I'm just a big fan of his art, and despite all of the bitter Blink fans that kind of try and tear him down at every step, I just kind of, you know, I wish I could be as ambitious and driven and you know, just let art consume my life as much as he does, so it's pretty cool to follow him on Instagram. And then he'll also post pictures of himself at his son's t-ball games.
Oh, dude.
And
every time Tom posts a picture of himself, especially when it's a selfie, it's always the same face. This isn't going to be fun for...
He'll always do pouty selfies.
Wait, it's not going to be fun for anyone, but I'm just going to show you, because you can see my face right now. You ready?
Yes, yeah. Spot on. Just he unfortunately your face isn't weird enough, so it's
no,
but but that's spot on.
Yeah.
And then sometimes what, you know, this is what I thought you were bringing up. Sometimes he'll actually, like, Google old pictures of himself, and
I don't really know if I've noticed that, like, as much, so that's funny.
Pictures of him, like, playing guitar, or you know, like, old promo photos from the Blink days.
Yeah.
So that's really funny, too. Yeah, he's a strange guy, and, yeah, I wish him the best, whether it's in Blink or not. But, you know, down the road, I'd love to see a Blink reunion with Tom.
Yeah,
a
second this, reunion. I guess maybe just to circle back quick, but right, this kind of started with, yeah, the whole serious talks that he had and some rumors swirling around. And he has saying that he's been, like, itching to play guitar and everything lately. So, did I cut you off? Were you going to say something?
No, I mean, he did tweet that he was having serious talks with Travis.
Yep.
And then Travis just replies with "ha"
right
on Twitter, which I thought was funny. But that's actually how, if you scroll through Travis's feed, that's kind of how he replies to everybody. So I wouldn't put too much stock into that.
Right, one way or the other.
But yeah, no, it makes you think, like, what are they seriously talking about? Is it Boxcar Racer? Is it something about Blink? About him returning to Blink or his legal standing? And I don't know. It's hard to say.
Has Travis now been abducted by aliens and they're going to do a...
That's possible, too.
A joint effort...
To correct you, I don't think Tom has been abducted by aliens, but I think he's had some sightings.
Oh, okay. So, it wasn't a full-on close encounter of the first kind.
I don't think it, no. I don't think it was an anal probing, no.
right. A close encounter of the fist kind, as they say.
Oh, boy. It's gross. I'm sure that's actually... in X-rated movie. I think I'm sure you could.
It's gotta be. That. There's no way.
Yeah. No, it has to be.
And, you know, it'd make a good future joke Blink song if Tom ever comes back.
I'm
not sure. You know, but I bet if Tom... Actually, this is an interesting question. So if Tom came back after California now, do you think he would do a joke song? Because I kind of don't think he would anymore. Like, I literally don't think he'd want to do it.
I think he would, because what's kind of funny is before California came out, after he was kicked out and left the band, you know, he put out this demo album, which is made up of songs that he was actually, or he says he was writing for the next Blink record. And there is one joke song on it called Golden Showers in the Golden State. and I mean... The chorus actually goes, "This is California." That's the chorus.
Wow.
And so it's kind of funny. I think I actually think he was closer to, you know, New Blink's headspace than people thought.
Well, that's funny. Shows what I know, I guess, just from all the Ava and stuff. I seems like he took his music more seriously these days. I wasn't sure that he would go that route, but that's funny.
Yeah, no, he definitely does, but I think he you know, loves his joke songs. Even live, the five times I've seen them post reunion, they've always played a few joke songs, which is a lot of fun. But yeah, you know, I feel like we always just say, you know, it would be cool if Tom returned, but you know, we're not betting on it, I guess.
Yeah.
But hopefully something comes of this hype.
Only time will tell.
Only Tom will tell.
Nice one.
So, this brings us to the reason we're here. Time to talk some albums, to swap some spit,
if you will, to use the title of the podcast.
And I have no gosh dang idea who talks first tonight.
I kind of think that I do.
I'm pretty sure that you do, too.
Okay, because, yeah. See, I'm
pretty sure you're right.
I feel like I'm kind of messing the bit up because, you know, you're doing the whole, like, but I'm actually looking to you. I need some guidance here, too.
Because you should always know, and I should never know, but tonight, I actually did know, and you you didn't. So, yeah. It's kind of flipped on its head.
Right. Well, you know, we're keeping the listeners on their toes. You know, who's telling the truth?
I bet they were so surprised there.
You gotta... The truth is out there, to use a
I bet they're
alien kind of term.
I bet there were a few audible gasps.
Probably.
Maybe the same noise that one would make if they were probed by an alien.
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't know.
or right? No, I don't know.
I'm I don't have a comment. I just want to say, like, I'm really, really happy that you went for that. You just went for the full...
The full Monty.
The full, you know, the full Monty, as they say. Especially, as I would say. Okay. You ready for me to dive in?
Yeah, let's just go for it.
All right. Actually, can you... Do you hear that?
No.
It doesn't... You don't hear any, like, hissing, or...
Is it on my end, or is it on your end?
It sounds like it's coming from the fauna.
Oh my god, you're such a... Oh, that was so good. That was so good, I didn't see it coming.
Oh man. You gave me Hissing Fauna, Are You the Destroyer, by Of Montreal. There it is.
I hear it now, Connor, I hear it now.
There's a snake in my boot. Hissing Fauna, Are You the Destroyer? What a title, let me tell you.
It's a mouthful.
I was very intrigued by that title. I still am, because I don't know what it means. And there is so much on this album that I just straight up don't understand. And
yeah,
I'm starting with this because that's definitely a reason that I like this album. Because it's very hard to pin down. And it defies a clear understanding. And yet gets a lot of difficult themes across. Conveys them in a way that, you know, some more abstract thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
I think because of its weirdness, it's able to go to certain places that a more traditional sounding and constructed record might not be able to do. Mm-hmm. And usually, you know, I don't have, like, a little preface thing here. I would just be talking about the first fucking track. But, I felt like I needed to sort of to preface that before I really jump in. It starts with Suffer for Fashion, which I kind of thought was just all right as an opener. Its sound is really bright, and it's light on its feet, and it's able to kind of jump between a couple different musical ideas pretty easily. In a way that, like, I thought was fun, and the guitar is mixed in really great. And as I expected, but not in the same way as Orient Gloom, there is a lot going on most of the time. And this this song is a good showcase for that, for, like, a lot of the layering. I'll get back to that, too. But there's probably a lot I'll be jumping around with. But, yeah, for the amount of times that I listened to this record, I never got sucked into this as the opener the way that I would expect or hope that an opener does. I kind of felt like this was one of those records that works with the whole 1-2 punch of opening their album, because it just flows so easily into Sink the Sena. So, you know, it continues this really cool flow. It's a bit more reserved, and I think it makes the first song feel more complete, just as, like, a natural transition. And then it goes into Kato as a Pun, and there's a ton of transitions on here. Maybe it's just me projecting in the way that I chose to think about the structure of the album, but, like, you know, Kato, even though it transitions, isn't, like, the third part of the first song. It's just the fucking third song now. And it was the first track that really made me listen up to the lyrics. Towards the middle, you know, it's like, I can't even pretend that you're my friend.
Yeah.
What has happened to you? And don't say that I've changed, because, man, of course I have.
Of course I have.
Yeah.
I love that lyric, too.
Yeah. No, it's really good. Yeah, and then it kind of, it goes into this cool, trippy outro electronic bit. But there's plenty of that on this record, too, but I thought this was, like, the first really good showcase for it. Heimdall's Gate, like a Promethean curse. Jesus Christ, these titles.
I know.
So this song has some really awesome lyrics in it, too. Kind of discussing the chemical roots of why people feel the way that they do. And it does it in a way that it's not like it's passing the buck or denying responsibility, but more about like feeling like you're at the mercy or the whim of your own thoughts, and that people aren't at fault for example, you know, being depressed. And so, right, the singer here seems to be really anxious about going back into that headspace and not being able to do anything about it. Like, it's a really, really interesting, unique... interesting's a fucking dumb word. It's not what I... It's like, it captures this really specific feeling of... like vague dread of like maybe you feel okay now, but you're worried that through having no control that you'll kind of sink back into a worse spot, and sort of like begging your chemicals to keep you at a more stable balance. And I was like, man, holy shit, this song is good.
And it's got a catchy-ass chorus, too.
It does. Yeah, no, it's totally takes the time to be catchy. The singing here is all pretty wacky. And the synth is super upbeat. It has, like, this cool 80s pop sort of vibe to it. Yeah, no, I mean... And that's definitely... The album doesn't always hit that right exact combo of, like, catchiness and rhythm and really awesome substance, and that's okay. I don't think it's always trying to. Sometimes it leans more heavily one way or the other, very intentionally. Mm-hmm. But you're definitely right to point out that this song's a high watermark for encapsulating those two things at once. Grönlandic edit. It has this really hypnotic beat that drew me in. The singer, again, is, like, super satisfying to listen to. But what I liked about this song is that that his singing, I thought, showcased a lot of skill. But it was also still really strange at the same time. The whole line, there's, like, this line about kind of wanting to believe in a god but being unsure about which one, and the rejection of like structure or maybe like organized religion because of the psychos and the confusers. You know, that's not really what this song is about, but every time I listen to it, I kind of got caught up in that because, you know, not to fucking put my fedora on, but I thought it was a good line. Oh, but overall, no, I thought the song was really good.
Mr. Atheism over here.
I'm not saying that.
Spelling his agenda.
My beliefs are my own, and I'm not here to talk about them. Tweet at me. All right. a sentence of sorts in Kongsvinger, I think is how that goes.
Yeah, sure, that works.
This song, you know, I think the last one's a bit more reserved, and I like that this one kicks off with this really great dance groove. It kind of continues this theme of, like, breaking down and mental health, And some of the lines I'd point to, it's trying to restructure my character because it had become vile to its creator. I thought that was a really solid line.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The chorus here is I think was one of my favorites, to be honest. Because again, I think it sounds awesome, but it has substance. It's not the same kind of substance as Heimdall, though, because the lyrics here are really, really abstract. Mm-hmm. But it always felt like it meant something. It's like, I'm not sure exactly how I'd explain it.
Yeah, I mean, like, these lyrics are abstract, so there are some moments that are hard to explain and kind of maybe can only be described in feelings, you know, rather than actually concrete reasoning.
I'd say so too. I guess my feelings on it were, and I think it's informed and influenced by the rest of the song that surrounds it, but I kind of got this sense of working through pain and finding solace in self-improvement, even if it's forced self-improvement, like kind of a fake it till you make it, sort of like, I'm just going to fucking be happy until I'm better, even though I'm not. So I thought this was one of the stronger tracks on here too. I had a lot of love for this one. And then the first real cut, because all the songs that I mentioned so far either like completely meld into one another or kind of fade in and out in a way that there's no real hard cut, but the end of Kongsvinger into The Past as a Grotesque Animal, it's not a hard cut, but it feels like the first real distinction between tracks on the album.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
Structurally, I love that because of what this song is and what it does, because holy shit, this song. All right, so
this song is insane.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. And I'm gonna do my best to kind of be as concise as possible with my thoughts, because, you know, if you wanted to, I feel like you could talk about just this song, and I'd have as much material to talk about as the album gives me, so.
Yeah, I know you could. I believe you could do that.
Oh, hey, thanks, Connor. That's nice of you to say. I believe you could, too, if you wanted to, so.
I don't want to.
I know. I don't want to either. That's why we're not going to. But, it starts off really slow, you know, and it builds, and the song gives its own self time to build in a way that felt really natural and creates this sense of, like, genuine anticipation before it actually starts with the vocals nearly 2 minutes in of a 12-minute song, for the record, for the listeners. This song clocks in at, like, 11:53. So, and the first line on this song is, "The past is a grotesque animal, and in its eyes you can see how completely wrong you can be." Which is, I mean, on top of being an awesome line and a great way to start a song, I thought it was a really clever reshaping of the old saying, you know, all that line really says is hindsight's 20/20. And everyone knows that, or, you know, most people do. But it took that same concept and was able to repackage it in a way that felt very compelling and different, because it's not just saying, like, oh, you know things from the past. Like, the past is a grotesque animal, you know, like this, I don't know, like a corrupt, I don't know, boar or some shit. I don't know, dude. I'm thinking of Princess Mononoke now, if anyone's listening to it.
Just
but.
That parts of the past are just totally... No, I mean, it's totally hideous to you. It can be, a disfigured version of yourself that you... I don't know.
Yeah. No, see?
Cringe at the sight of.
Exactly. And the lyrics here, as the song goes on, one, there's a ton of fucking lyrics, because the other thing this song completely just does not give a shit about is structure. I don't know, I mean, with the exception of, like, literally one or two lines, and I think it's because he repeats them one after the other, like, he mm-hmm. says them just to, like, reiterate it, there's just no repeated lines. He just keeps going. So I just picked out a few lyrics that I wanted to, that I thought were really worth noting. Like, how can I explain I need you here and not here too? Actually, I think that's one of the ones that he repeats.
Yeah.
At least I author my own disaster.
Yeah, it's another one that I like.
Right? Things could be different, but they're not. That one's super simple. And I, you know, I think it's a thought that a lot of people have, but to vocalize that on a song like this too, you know, sometimes the simplicity of something is able to give it more meaning, or that simple mm-hmm. truths can mean just as much as yeah. more complex ones. And, you know, just a line like that sort of almost trying to, come to terms with how things are, and that dwelling on the way things could be different is never ultimately helpful, because it only promotes, you know, suffering and negativity. It's like we were made for this world, but I wouldn't really want to meet someone who was. Yeah. Mm. I don't know, man. I could go on, honestly. I mean, you know that. I could. I'm going to stop. But so much of this song hits home, and none of it's good. It's, like, really shitty. And you know, I've been giving you albums with certain songs on them, and you'll go, you know, man, this is when the album really got real. This is when, you know, it was hard to keep listening to. And I've appreciated that you were honest about saying that. And with the albums that you've given me, it's not that I don't get those feelings sometimes, but, like, this is the first song for an album that you've given me, I don't know, since whenever, that, like, really feels like it's worth mentioning that this song was never, like, enjoyable. It was, like, always kind of an exercise, and not just because it's long. Sure. It's, like, it just demands that you, like, sit there and listen to it, and you kind of go into this weird, like, meditative state, because there's no structure to this song other than just, like, this repetitive beat that goes for the whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
And with these, like, verses being sung over it as it expands, it kind of becomes, like, this bizarre, super personal, like, stream of consciousness confession. And every time I listened to it, I felt like I was right there, like, in that moment. So, yeah, I mean,
it kind of feels like you're trapped in the song's own personal hell or something.
Definitely. Yeah. Like, fucking spot on. I think that's exactly what it feels like. And so, you know, you kind of just need to wait it out. And but I think that's what's good about the song, and that's what's beautiful about it. That's what makes it such an incredible song. Like when you watch a really sad movie, it's like, well, did you enjoy it? No, but like, fuck, like, it's amazing that it can make me feel that way.
And for sure.
It takes so much more effort, you know, usually, to accomplish something like that. And so I think it's a real testament to their songwriting and their style that they could, one, even make a song like this, have it work, and I don't know, and I guess just to dredge up those feelings that it does in a way that doesn't feel like ham-fisted. It's not going for any cheap blows. It's not like some sappy fucking sad song with just one guy and an acoustic guitar, you know. Not to hate on those, you know, that's fine too. But, like, that's almost more what you'd expect. And this song is not what you'd expect.
Mm-mm.
I think I'm talking in circles a bit now, but Thank you for helping me out there, too. You were able to really rein me in and boil down what I was trying to say in there. So, even talking about that song, it's easy to get caught up in. You just get stuck.
It's a tough one. It's a very involved listening experience.
It is. And I really love its place in the album, is the last thing I want to say. It's just a little bit after halfway, and it's so long, like, by the time you're done with it, you only have about a third left to go for the record.
Mm-hmm.
If that. Yeah, just about there, probably. And so it creates this very, very clear valley between the first part of the album and the last part. And then you just have this just fucking right there in the center. And so it made the album really easy to dissect. I would say
this takes up the middle of the album in its entirety. This one song is the middle of the album.
Yes, it is. And I like that they go for that. So after that, it goes, you get Bunny Ain't No Kinda Rider. And this song is kind of, has been strangely relevant to me to the point where, like, it wasn't. Like, what am I trying to say? Like, you gave this album to me, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, in some ways, some of the events that this song recounts happened to me a bit, or feels like they did. So
nice.
It was like a strange experience, and
yeah,
it's not, you know, I'm not saying this is like a one-to-one, but like over the course of the week, as I was listening to this album, I was kind of like, holy shit, I feel like part of me like lived this song. And so I don't know, this whole, you know, you ain't got no soul power.
I know.
singing's great here again. I don't know. And going through, like, you know, maybe not knowing what you want, but knowing this person that you're with doesn't have that thing.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Clubs, cigarettes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Vague words I'm going to keep throwing out there, but
you know all about that shit.
Faberge Falls for Shuggy. Yeah. This song felt like the weirdest, coolest elevator music I can imagine. In a good way. It has like this really chill keyboard, kind of just doing its thing over like this really warm funk beat. And then like the vocals really clash with it, and they get a bit more wild on top of it. I like that whole juxtaposition going on. I thought it had a really great groove to it, and then the end of it, you get this really kind of delightful, like, left turn. It feels like the song remixes itself within, like, the last 30 or 40 seconds, which was pretty sweet. Labyrinthian Pomp is honestly, like, the only song in this album I don't really have much to talk about. Like, that's the one song I'd be like, I thought that song was all right.
Yeah,
I don't got much more there. She's a Rejector. I like, you know, this, it just, like, starts right the second Pomp ends, and it doesn't waste any time, because it just kind of explodes with these strong guitars. And then there's, like, these really weird whispering parts, but the same guitar is still cutting through it. I thought that was a really cool effect. The chorus here is fun. I thought this was another song. It's like a good compromise between some of the dancier elements and then like a bit more rock power behind it to beef it up too. And I thought it was a pretty solid penultimate song. Before We Were Born, The Mutants Again with Leafling. A closing track. And what a title. Again. So the album goes through one final awesome transition between Rejector and Leafling. And it slowly eases you out onto the other side with these, like, dreamy guitars and keys. And, you know, it seems to be, like, a really sweet song after all of this conflict and turmoil that the album deals with. It's really a song about, like, companionship and having two people mm-hmm. who can be hard for the other person to understand at times, or who may not feel like they belong together entirely, but, like, their mutual love kind of lends a sense of purpose and validity to themselves. And I was surprised that that's, if I was reading the lyrics right, or if there is a right way to read the lyrics, rather, I'm surprised that that's the note it went out on, but I found myself liking it more and more
yeah.
as I listened to it. I wish that the song lingered just a bit longer at the end and maybe have, like, the rest of the song fade out and just leave the vocals hanging there for a second or two before cutting, because I feel like the way it fades out as is, even though it is a fade out, it's a little abrupt to me. And yeah, I do pick on fade outs a lot. It's the last song, so I think a fade out is, like, totally appropriate, but it felt just a little rushed for an album that I think felt so at liberty to take its time and be strange
yeah,
at other points.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. But I do think that this album closes significantly better than it opens. Because the opener, I don't really have anything bad to say about it. I just didn't care that much. And the closer, I really got into by the more I listened to the album. It grew on me
yeah.
a lot. So, overall, I've probably been talking about this album for, you know, a bit. There's a lot to talk about here.
For a while,
right.
at least.
Well.
But it's a very, it's a very heavy listen, so I don't blame you.
Well, hey, good. Thanks. Yeah, I'd say, you know, ultimately, this album is really cool. I like how large it feels, and the 50-ish minute runtime, I think, is, like, really justified. And, you know, there's not a lot of 50-minute albums that I'd agree with that on completely.
No.
Even though I don't think 50 is, like, egregious for an album, to be honest, but, like, with the exception of Labyrinthian Pomp, which honestly I might lose just to free up some time, you know, this album does so much that it'd be tough to expect it to be shorter, too. And it has this, like, murky, at times dark, like, psychedelic pop feel that made the album feel really unified sound-wise, even when it branched off into, like, more rock territory or even more, like, experimental bits here and there. The vocals, particularly, are awesome, especially when they get a bit stranger, too. I really like the vocalist. And, you know, I like that they can be weird like that. I don't think it's for weirdness' sake. I just think they just don't pull any punches, and that's kind of what comes out at the end mm-hmm. result. So it's just fun to, like, listen to this band do what they want. It, you know, it's super Bowie. It feels like his fingerprints are all over this record, and
yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I think everything they do
yeah.
is clearly influenced by Bowie.
Even,
in a good way.
Right, yeah, definitely. I even felt, I kind of forget, I wanted to, like, mention what part specifically, but I even felt like the stranger aspects of Hot Hot Heat kind of creep their way into this, but,
yeah, I mean, Suffer for Fashion.
Yeah.
Is kind of reminiscent of early Hot Hot Heat.
Yeah.
That's a song Steve Bays could write.
Could be. But, you know, it's, those two things aren't to say, you know, obviously this album is completely of Montreal's own. So I felt really satisfied with how uniquely them it felt, even though I've only listened to one other album by them, Orient yeah. Gloom. But it's pretty different from Orient Gloom too, and I don't know if this album falls before or after and how far, but
this is before.
Okay.
A few albums before.
Yeah, it's like this one was, if I'm remembering it the way I have it in my head, like this record feels more hypnotic and electro, and the other album was just like so.
It's like straight kind dense. Of 70s rock.
Right, yeah, and all, yeah, it's exactly. It's all rock.
Like dense, yeah. Epic, conceptual yep. 70s rock.
So, yeah, I don't know. But I like that that both albums were obviously Orient Gloom, but have their just a totally separate direction and charm to them. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I have a lot of respect for bands that can retain their sound, their identity, rather, but change their sound.
Absolutely.
That's a tough thing to do.
Yeah, that's a great skill to have as a band.
Absolutely.
And they have it in spades.
All right, last thing. I just want to say, I mentioned it before on the specific songs, but the lyrics, you know, some of them are like totally blunt and on point, and some of them are super vague and abstract.
Yeah.
But they all serve their purpose. I thought, you know, I don't always pull out lyrics like that the way I do when I discuss albums, but I really felt like these ones warranted it. There was a lot to love on this album. Overall, though, I am going to give it 7.5 grotesque animals out of 10 mutants.
Okay.
So there you go.
That's a very good, respectable score. And I enjoyed listening to all of your thoughts on the record.
Hey, thanks.
As always, I enjoy your in-depth analysis. I'm sure our listeners at home do too. So for me, Orient Gloom was the first record by them that I had listened to as well, and that was kind of an immediate thing for me, where I took to it right away, and, you know, I still love it. This is the second album by them that I tried to get into, and it's been kind of an ongoing process for me. I feel like the first half is super my taste, and then you get to Grotesque Animal, and that's amazing and crazy and, you know, terrible and hard to get through, but also you can't help but listen to it in full. Then after that, it kind of gets into this, like, funk section, which is really cool. And it's taken me a while to appreciate the second half, or the last third. And so just recently I've been revisiting it, and have really rated the kind of last part higher than I used to. And yeah, I still think that, actually, maybe how it is that, you know, my mental state when I first picked this album up was more in tune with the first five or so songs mm-hmm. before Grotesque Animal, and then now as time has gone on, I'm kind of more aligned with the with what the funkier songs are trying to say,
right?
And I mean, there's still a you know, a negativity or a bitterness to them, but I think all in all they're kind of brighter and kind of have a little bit more optimism, you know, especially with how it ends. So,
yep.
Yeah, and like you said, the lyric, you know, I mean, nothing I say can add anything to what you said at this point. But I actually do love Suffer for Fashion as an opener. I think it's a cool way to kick off the album. It is definitely separate in theme to the rest of the record, but it's just catchy as hell, and I really dig it. So I actually think it opens stronger than it closes.
You know, I think one of the things that I got hung up on unfairly is I think that one of my favorite openers still actually is on Orient Gloom, though.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not saying that, you know, that every of Montreal album should open like that, because it's like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But, like, but this one didn't, like, it never finished, and I was left feeling like, man, that was, like, a good opener. I feel like it always just kind of, like, happened, and I'm like, all right, I'm still kind of waiting
totally
on the third
that.
Song. So
yeah, yeah, your expectations were a little bit different. But yeah, with a band like Of Montreal, I feel like you're always going to be given a left turn. So, anyways, yeah, I think it's masterfully constructed. It's a great cohesive work, even though parts of it are very different and they go into so many different directions. I like it a lot, but I'm going to give it a 7 pomps out of 10 rejectors. So,
fun fact,
a little bit lower than you.
Well, I just want to mention, actually, because when I do this, I'm reading off notes and stuff, you know, to,
yeah,
that's how I sound so eloquent.
It's not all improvised. What?
I mean, some of it is, and at the end of that, I always write my score. And when I wrote down these notes, my score was a 7. But,
oh, really?
Yep. But I got it, when I got done talking about it just now, like, sometimes you, like, say something out loud, and then you're like, you know, shit, like, I just said all that, you know, I mentioned all these things I feel like I can relate to and that I enjoyed, and then I'm like, you know, and I hardly had any worthwhile negatives to point to, and I'm like, you know what, fuck a 7. Even though that's what I thought initially.
Nice, good for you.
7.5.
Good for you, man.
So, that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, it's definitely, for me, it's a strong 7, but I do feel like some of this album could be cut.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the second half could be chopped off, and I would be fine.
Yep.
But then also, it's like I'm still getting into that second half. So,
right.
So, you know, my opinions this time, a month from now, could be totally different. Yeah, as of right now, it's a strong 7 for me.
Nice.
So, I guess I'm up now.
Yeah, I guess you are. You'll be discussing a very different album.
Extremely different album, and it's gonna, be 1/3 of the length of,
That's probably a good thing, so.
Well, I don't know, because I, you know, I feel like it might be kind of like dick length. You know, I kind of feel inadequate.
Oh, no, no, no. And, you know, hey, much like dick length, you know, no one should make you feel bad about that. Come on.
It's how you use
that's
it.
That's right. That's
that's the truth.
Even though both of us have notoriously big dicks, for the record.
We've got huge...
For anyone listening.
We've got huge schlongs.
That's the word I should have used.
You know, men should be envious, and ladies should be...
More envious.
Should be appalled. should be terrified. Yeah. I mean, let's not get into it. Let's save a little for the imagination, all
right? Right.
Anyhow, the album you gave me was Buffalo Springfield.
Yep.
By Buffalo Springfield.
Can you believe that they named someone that?
I know.
Such a weird name.
I was gonna say again. That, yeah, initially I thought that Buffalo Springfield was just a name of, like, a country singer or something.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like, a month ago or a month and a half ago, you know, we were in this record store and you pointed out to me, you're like, hey, it's that might, I might give you that record. Lo and behold,
here we are.
A month later, you gave me the record. Here we are. And so it actually happens to be, I guess, a bit of a super group.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like before they all got big. It's not like, you know, Bono and
right.
Eddie Van Halen and Chris Martin from Coldplay got together and like formed this super group later in their career. This is like an early band starting out. Then they kind of went their separate ways and got big.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool story. And so, yes, it opens up with For What It's Worth, which is, it's a classic song. Of course I know this song. It's got that guitar riff is, you know, everybody knows this song when they hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a classic folk rock song. It really holds up to the present day, especially with the message that it carries. You know, people should listen to it with a little bit more care. You know, they should just stop.
Right. What's that sound, you know? Everybody look what's going down.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, so for what it's worth, people should really
nice.
Listen to the song a little bit better.
One.
It's a great opener. It's an awesome song. It's like one of those classic tunes that I'd have a hard time finding anybody who would dislike this song or would change the radio station if you're, you know, cruising down the road and flipping through stations.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just a good song. And yeah, kind of gives me an idea of what I am in for. Then we go into Go and Say Goodbye, which honestly, it's good, but it's just a catchy pop song. It's not as socially relevant or layered as For What It's Worth is, but it's just a good song where, you know, I think, you know, if it was written by the Beatles, it could have been a big hit. It's just kind of a standard pop song of its time. And, I'm somebody who really appreciates those. And so I really enjoyed it. Sit Down, I Think I Love You is another pop song, but it's kind of a little bit more sugary sweet, and it's got country flair to it. I guess a little bit of twang. Honestly, at this point in the album, I'm like kind of second guessing what
right.
maybe this album is. And no, not necessarily in a bad way. Because like I said, you know, I feel like the big pop songs of the 60s kind of inform my music taste of today, where I'm a huge power pop fan. And, you know, I feel like bands like Weezer and Green Day and so many other groups, they really take the melodic core of just these simple, bright melodies from the 50s and 60s. So, yeah, I get a lot of enjoyment out of those two tracks. We get into Nowadays, Clancy Can't Even Sing, which is a dark ballad, something that I like a lot. And it actually reminds me a good bit of Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, I think.
Yeah, I think they've got, you know, really interesting lyrics, you know, kind of tells a story, which obviously is a staple in folk music. And then, yeah, like the vocal melodies are kind of dark and melancholic. And, I like this one a lot. I appreciated its place in the record. I think it was definitely needed after primarily two pop songs. Hot Dusty Roads is about just, you know, it's about a city boy who just does not want to be alone.
Nailed it.
Reminds me of a little guy named Connor Kelly.
That's right.
Just a city boy who needs some companionship. I like the song a good bit. I like the chorus a lot. You know, it's kind of about self-introspection and about pairing off just for the company. And also, you know, you can kind of look at it like how Hissing Fauna ended, too. But this kind of, I don't know, it's kind of, yeah, I mean, for me, I kind of thought about it like just settling to have somebody by your side.
Right.
You know, maybe it's not the most whirlwind of a romance, but at least being alone. Especially for a city boy who's not going to walk down those hot, dusty roads.
No.
I like the guitar solo on this a lot, too. I thought that was really well done and fun. We get to Everybody's Wrong, which I feel like is another Simon and Garfunkel-ish tune. It's got a great melody, which I think is definitely one of the strong suits on this record. I think that this is their first record, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, self-titled is the first record. At this point in their careers, they've already got a really strong handle on melody and, like, just song structure. I think it's all really well done. Flying on the Ground is Wrong. Just the name by itself is super weird.
Yeah.
But I love it, and I was kind of anticipating it. Yeah, it's about a relationship that wasn't meant to be, and it's a pretty bittersweet song. I thought this was a standout vocal performance on the album. It's a really catchy melody. And somehow, in the context of the song, the sentence, "flying on the ground is wrong," actually does make sense. I like this one. I dig it. Burned is a catchy song with great harmonies. It's one of the fastest songs on the record. You know, one of the most rockish tunes. I think it's just a simple song about, you know, being burned by somebody or something, and you know, kind of feeling crappy about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it keeps it simple, and it's a good song. Do I Have to Come Out Right Out and Say It is another one of my favorites. It's you know, whereas Go and Say Goodbye and Sit Down and Think I Love You were kind of more 60s pop tunes. This is kind of a 50s pop vibe with that kind of guitar strumming pattern, which is kind of synonymous with the 50s. Kind of about being afraid of falling in love or admitting that to the other person. It's got a really nice melodic guitar solo, another great vocal performance. It's kind of like a 50s pop song with kind of a folky twist. And it's just like a sweet, sweet, sweet melody. One that I like a lot and has been in my head for days. After that, we get Leave, which is a pretty straightforward rock song. This is probably the most rocking tune out of the entire bunch. About a breakup, I think. About asking somebody to leave. And it's got a killer guitar solo. This is kind of the guitar is let loose. You know, volume's turned up, it's let loose. Feels kind of like a proper rock song at times. I like that. Out of My Mind is another standout for me. It's a really cool guitar melody. I love the backing vocals and the lyrics a lot. I'd say it's one of my favorites because I am very much familiar with being out of my mind or feeling like I'm out of my mind. Subject matter hits close to a home, and I appreciate it for that. And also, it's also kind of one of the weirder songs on the album, just with the melody and the subject matter, I guess. But yeah, they do it really well, and I like it. I like it a lot. Pay the Price is the final song.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a straight up folk rock song to close this out. All I have to say about Pay the Price is that it's really not a bad song, but doesn't close the record super strongly. Compared to For What It's Worth, it's really no comparison in my opinion. So yeah, I think it's a solid record. It's got quite a few good songs and some really, really strong moments on there. But I think it's only consistently all right. At times, it feels like a band experimenting and pushing their sound. And for a first album, it's super, super impressive. But for my taste, I think I would have liked them to push a little bit harder in these different directions. So for me, it's going to be 6.5 Buffaloes out of 10 Clancy's.
Nice.
And honestly, for me too, I wrote down six out of 10.
Oh, so I guess
going through it, you kind of got into my head because I do like all these songs I like a lot. So I'm gonna push it up to 6.5.
Well, you know, look at us. We're just on the fly, off the cuff.
I know. By the seat of our pants.
That's right. Hey, well, that's cool. You know, honestly, it's, yeah. I don't know. I guess I don't want to say more than I thought you'd give it necessarily, but I guess that's also kind of what I'm thinking. So I'm glad that you enjoyed it as much as you did. I think the only things I'd want to comment on briefly, one, I completely agree that there's like a lot of ideas on this album that could have been developed more. One of the reasons that I love it is because as I've been like, just like, listening to more Neil Young and liking him more, like, I kind of like this album in some ways because of the songs on it that I don't think are as strong, because all the songs on this album that are fucking incredible, Neil Young's responsible for. And so it...
Okay.
It kind of makes...
Okay.
It's dumb, but, like, it makes me feel... I'm just like, yeah, like, this is kind of...
Validated.
Right, I don't know. It's stupid, because I'm not trying to... You know, I think the... fucking theme of this podcast, I'm not trying to shame anyone. I don't want like Stephen Stills to feel bad. I think his songs are fine, but
yeah,
you know, Neil Young did Nowadays Clancy Can't Even Sing, Flying on the Ground Is Wrong, Do I yeah. Have to Come Right Out to Say It, and Out of My Mind, which I mean, I think those are the standout songs.
Those are the strongest tunes, right? For sure. So, like, if I matched with you on Tinder, and I was like, hey, I'm a huge Neil Young fan, too. You know, Harvest Moon was my album of the year last year.
Right.
And you're like, that's his worst run. You know, try Buffalo Springfield. Come right. On.
You fucking idiot. That's exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Out of My Mind is the best song on here. I would say, I also think you're right about Pay the Price, and it is kind of weird, like, especially, like, I wonder if the album would be better if it just closed with Out of My Mind as, like, this really good, kind of somber,
yeah,
more reserved,
it could,
ending. But I've been listening to this album for kind of a while now, and, I don't think Pay the Price is incredible, and it's still not that great of a closer, but, it is a song that's grown on me a lot too.
Yeah, it's not a bad song. It's just not a standout.
No, it's not. Yeah, you know, I'd really just say I think this album is interesting for basically, I feel like it does like two things. You'll get like yeah, like those really kind of like country-ish, twangy melodic songs, and then like these like kind of slower, almost I don't know, like a weird, like an experimental rock for the time, you know, with
yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And the guitar tones they use are so different. It kind of goes from like these like really reverby, you know, I think you were right to say like kind of psychedelic sounds to like mm-hmm. really weird transitions into like country pop territory, and I think it's such a weird mix. At first, I honestly like really wasn't that on board, because you know, right, it starts off with such a killer famous song that like everything that comes yeah, after sure. it for a bit is just like weird. So
doesn't live up to the
right
to his single at first glance.
Right. The fun fact is when this album first came out, it came out before they released For What It's Worth as a single. So this this album, I forget, I think it might have just started with Go and Say Goodbye. And then there was another song on it later that they cut out. They reissued the album because For What It's Worth was so famous when it came out. They're like, well, we're going to capitalize on this.
Yeah.
They cut out a song to add For What It's Worth. I've never bothered to listen to what the song is that they cut. I don't really care. I haven't done it. But presumably it's out there somewhere. At any rate, I would give this album 7. Buffaloes out of 10 Springfields.
Okay.
For the record, not to give too much away, but, you know, they have 2 other albums, you know, that, hey, I may or may not have listened to, and you may or may not be getting at some point in the future, and I think they may, may develop in some ways that you might enjoy. So I'm excited to to continue that. That's why, you know, I don't think this is necessarily their best, but I wanted to give it to you first. So
great.
So there you
That's cool. I was happy with it. Thank you for giving it to me. It was a fun, you know, blast from the past.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, I was going through my mail earlier today, and it was strange. The only thing that it said on the envelope was my name. It just said Connor. You know, there was no address. Sure. I don't really know how it found me necessarily.
Very peculiar thing.
Right, very peculiar. But, you know, it was addressed to me. So I said, you know, I gotta open this. I gotta open this letter. And, you know, I ripped open that seal, peeled back that rip, because I'm really bad at opening letters. And,
you and me both, buddy.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a handwritten letter in there.
Written with a hand.
Written. Maybe even 2. I don't know. Probably just 1. And, you know, Connor, on that letter, it said something that frightened me and amazed me and astonished me and surprised me all at once. I never could have expected it.
Boy.
Do you know what it said?
The Do-Over is the best Adam Sandler movie.
I swear, if it did, I would have fucking, I don't care how little information was on this letter, I would have sent that thing off to a lab to get it DNA tested to find out whose fingerprints are on it, to see who thinks that, and why would fucking antagonize me with the shittiest, worst sentence you can ever even tell a person, probably. I don't even have strong feelings on Adam Sandler movies. I don't give that much of a shit. I just want people to know it's because that's how bad the Do-Over movie is. It's the worst fucking movie.
Did not mean to get you all riled up, all worked up.
Sorry.
You can tell us what the letter
said.
Talk
first, give first, motherfucker.
Holy shish kebab. Talk first, give first.
Yep.
Hey, well, you know, you talked first tonight.
I sure as shit did. And so
I think maybe.
Oh, I think I'm. You should give I'm first? Giving first, buddy. You ready to get? Okay. You ready to get all given?
Right. Let's get given.
Cool. So the Of Montreal album you gave me, kind of, you know, sometimes we'll like give each other albums that are similar, blah blah. Ours were pretty different this week, but the album you gave me inspired me to be like, you know what? Yeah, I want to give Connor. And you know, lately we haven't really been. We kind of just say our albums and be like, peace. But I'm going to give you just a small bit. And, you know, obviously, no pressure to reciprocate, but I was like, you know, I want to give Connor kind of like a weird sort of introspective pop album of my own that I got in my back pocket. And so, you know, it won't be of Montreal. What is, you know, but it's something that Hissing Fauna made me want to give you. So,
okay.
Your album is called Reptilians by Starfucker.
Oh.
Yeah, right? Doesn't that name just make you go,
we're going to have to censor that.
Well, then how are people going to know what it is?
Just joking. We can swear on the podcast.
Yeah.
I have heard that name before, so that's interesting and exciting. Yeah, cool. I'm totally down to listen to Starfucker.
Nice.
Hopefully they starfuck me up.
I think they just might.
So yeah, this album I'm giving you probably, it's going to be different than this, but I think they might go together. I'm thinking they might go together well thematically, and maybe things they've been inspired by, maybe. This is an album it's been kind of in my back pocket for a while. I think it's finally time to give to you. It's When I Am Gone, My Blood Will Be Free by Call Me Lightning.
Oh, I don't know what any of that is. So neat.
I actually gave it to you a few weeks, maybe a month or two ago, and then we kind of changed our minds on something, and I went back on it and gave you something else. I forgot what it was.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so I've been wanting to give this to you for a while. Now it's time. I think it'll be cool.
Nice.
I think next week will be a fun discussion.
Well, I think it will be too. I'm very excited, as always.
As am I. And, you know, as always, any final thoughts, concerns, comments you want to give to our listeners tonight?
You know, just we've had a lot of fun here tonight. And we like to joke around, but you know, I just want to mention that both me and Connor are very staunchly anti-bullying. We do not shame people. And we both love Tom DeLonge and John Travolta. I don't think I'm putting words in anyone's mouth here. So,
And, you know, anyone who thinks otherwise, shame on them.
Just I'd have no problem shaming them. I'd shame the fuck out of those guys.
No, but honestly, yeah, full disclosure, me and the Tinder girl, we had a nice conversation besides the whole elitism.
Well, that's thing. Sweet. I mean, I'm glad we got that cleared up at least. So
it was a fine conversation. We probably would have met up if we didn't live in different states. So
it's a classic pop punk Romeo and Juliet situation.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you're listening, I forget your name already, but if you're listening to this, I just want to say sorry. No hard feelings. Next time you're in town, let's go to a punk show.
Yeah.
And make fun of all the kids in the Dookie t-shirts.
Fuck yeah. Because there's so many of those, right? There's just many kids.
Every punk show you go to is just kids in Dookie shirts. Like, what? Man. Is it 94? Or 2017, right?
You tell me that all those kids in your Dookie shirts at punk shows that I see every time.
Every time.
There's so many of them.
Because, you know, it's 11:37. We're getting loopy. It's pretty late. We're just two kids up way past our bedtime.
It's time to call it.
So, as always,
keep spitting.
Just, you know, keep spitting.
But really keep on spitting.